He's dumb and has a, he's dumb and doesn't know the law. That's a combination, and mean. Mean, dumb, ignorant, dumb, and mean. The worst combination for a judge.
Welcome to the Tip the Scales podcast, where we discuss running and growing your law firm. I'm your host, Maria Monroy, president and co-founder of LawRank. Today, I am joined by my good friend, Dan Ambrose. And this is one of those episodes that I think I'm just going to call shooting the shit. I don't know how else to explain it, but we did talk about Huntington Beach, TLU that's coming up, his Vegas conference in October, which is one of my favorite conferences, and I'm super excited about it. I'm positive that everybody that's ever met Dan has wondered this. We talked about his childhood. We did. It was really interesting. I feel like I got to know Dan a little better after this episode. I hope you guys enjoy this one. Hold the mic. Yes. Okay.
All right. I feel so important. I have the Tip the Scales. How come I end up say Law Rank?
We're working on that.
Can we double brand the side Law Rank Tip the Scales?
That's what I said today. I literally said that today. That's what we're doing. The great minds think alike.
Always be branding, Matt.
Yes.
Somebody's like, "Do you have, how many of those shirts do you have?" I'm like, "I have no idea." But it's, that's like Steve Jobs in his turtleneck. We should put the same shirt on every day, and it's one less thing to think about.
Do you know why he did that? We're live, by the way. Or, well, not live, but
right.
We're on.
Well, yeah, he did that so he doesn't have to think about what to wear.
Exactly.
Like, I don't think about what to wear.
I love thinking about what I have to wear.
Well, you have more bandwidth than me and Steve Jobs.
I do.
We focus on our business.
Well, hello.
Oh, little jab.
Hello.
Little jab. That's okay.
Well, welcome back.
Oh, it's so exciting to be back here on the, it's not quite the casting couch, but it's sort of like the interview couch.
Yeah. I'm very comfortable.
Me too.
Yeah, it's nice.
Perfect.
Okay, well, so we're going to talk about a few things today. And I want to start by asking you, I don't even know the answer to this. I think I do, but maybe I don't. What are you most excited about right now?
What am I most excited about right now? Well, right now I'm most excited about this coming weekend.
Oh, why? You have a boot camp?
I have a boot camp this weekend, and there's so many really great lawyers coming to it. And I'm, you know, and so when people, and they're really practiced, you know what I mean? They're really prepared, because the more preparation people do, the more it's going to transform their ability to present and connect.
And you don't let them come to the boot camp if they don't do the homework, right? And they don't practice?
Right. Well, there's, you know, 6 weeks of preparation, because they have to know the materials, and practicing and recording yourself on Zoom. And we go over these recordings and coach people via Zoom, so that by the time they get there, they're really ready to go. And so we're just doing the refinement in person. And that's when the, you know, that's when the changes happen. Is it takes work. You know, this, like, learning a skill is that you can't just sit back and watch people perform.
Right.
You got to get up and you got to try.
You got to
fail. You got to get coaching, and then you got to try it again. And it's a learnable skill, being a great presenter.
And this year, your Vegas conference will be back.
That's right. We're going back, coming back to Vegas. And I live there now, so it makes it a little more convenient.
Yeah.
So every day when I get up and I look out the window, I see Caesar's Palace in the distance, knowing that in probably about, what, 8 months now, that we're going to transform at least part of Caesar's Palace into a extravaganza for trial lawyers.
I'm super excited. That's one of my favorite conferences.
Well, if that was one of your favorite conferences when it was at Mandalay Bay, I think at Caesars is going to be an improvement, because I thought Mandalay Bay was nice. Some people weren't fans of it.
But what about the way that you're going to have, well, I mean, I had some issues with Mandalay Bay, but what about the exhibit hall? Is it still going to be the same size or bigger?
It's really big.
Awesome.
When you walk into the exhibit hall, it looks like a stadium, but that's because there's nothing in it. But, mm-hmm. you know, in the day it takes to transform it, when, you know, all the booths go in, and all the lounges and the pillars go up with the, you know, with everybody's, you know, all the branding on it, and people see their stuff come to life, and it's just the energy of the place, and the ping pong tables and the you know, the foosball and the air hockey and all the games. So it really becomes a place where people want to hang out and just connect. And I'm looking forward to it.
I've actually never seen you happier than during, like, the last day or two of your Vegas conference. It's the happiest I've ever seen you.
Well,
you don't agree. I think
it's not. It's somewhere of a combination of. I think it's probably a lot more like relief.
Yes, that's why you seem so happy when it's over and like so proud at the same time and like.
Because when you have 1,000 or 1,200 people traveling from around the country to come to something you put together, you know, there's a lot of pressure and I only have so much control.
Do people give you shit about things?
Very little.
I mean, think they're scared of you.
I don't know if that's true. I'd be surprised. Sometimes I have, but in general, people, I think, you know, sometimes people are difficult to deal with, but
you're very easy to deal with.
I try to be, you know, but there's a lot of prima donnas in the law business.
That is true.
And
I will give that one
right,
to you.
You just have to roll with it. You can't get let, you know, we're having a meeting the other day on Zoom and Matt is upset because it's like this person we were talking to was very condescending and somewhat arrogant. And he's like, that person is really condescending and arrogant. I'm like, so what? There's a lot of that out there. You can't let that throw you off. That's their problem, not ours. We just can be nice as can be to everybody and just keep rolling and not let it just affect our attitudes.
Yeah, I could see how you might let it go faster than other people. Sometimes. I've also seen you riled up sometimes.
Well, that was when I was younger. Probably haven't seen me riled up in a while because I don't really get riled up. I do my best not to get riled up because it doesn't do any good. All it does is cause more resistance.
I could rile you up right now.
But why would I doubt that, because first of all, that would mean I don't have control over my own emotional state, which I'm pretty sure I do.
You were literally riled up downstairs 2 minutes ago.
What was I riled up about?
Or maybe you just come across more riled up than you are.
Maybe. So we're riled up, I'm enthusiastic, but when you say upset, riled up, I have like a negative connotation of like some type of anger or something.
Yes, you were. I even told you to not talk to me that way. You know, people ask me all the time about our friendship.
Oh,
people are very
curious.
You're
sensitive, okay? You're sensitive.
I don't think people would ever say that about me.
Okay.
Really?
Not to your face, but if you want to believe that, you go ahead and believe that. They don't, but...
Okay. So we've established that I'm sensitive. Do you think it's because I'm a female? You're like, I'm not lucky.
Really, just step on a landmine. Yes, that's exactly why, Maria, because you're a female, and that's why you're volatile, and you have emotional, and you get angry with me at times, unpredictably, you know.
I actually think it's very predictable when I'm going to be angry at you.
It's kind of like, remember that video, The Hot Crazy Matrix?
No.
Oh, it's a video that this guy had this philosophy that the hotter a woman is, the crazier she is.
Okay.
And so you just have to find a place where you can, like there's a tipping point between hot and crazy. You're like, okay, that's where I'm at.
So are you saying that I am hot or that I'm not hot? This is going really sideways. I'm going to have to edit all of this shit out. I hope you're happy.
No, I'm saying because you are kind of hot, that makes you crazy.
Wait.
And so that gives you more room to be crazy because you've gotten away with a lot of stuff your whole life because of your looks.
Okay. So just kind of hot though. Just want to make sure that.
Right, kind of hot, but it's like...
Kind of hot, guys.
I'm just telling you from experience.
Okay.
Sometimes women that are too attractive, they have things too easily.
But I'm only kind of...
And they don't understand how...
I have things too easily. We can't post this shit, Dan.
Well, there's a lot of editing. That's okay. It's just... You want to get real, we're getting real, and then we'll work on it later.
Okay. Okay.
All right. Let's get back to more serious conversations.
2 minutes worth of content.
Okay.
Okay. So, Huntington Beach. Tell me a little bit about it.
Let's just take it one step at a time. To me, it's at the greatest hotel for doing a conference because the Paseo is on the ocean. Every room has a balcony and an ocean view. We have the entire hotel.
I'm not a fan.
Well, because that's a Maria problem.
Because I'm sensitive.
Everybody else loves the hotel. You're the only person that doesn't love the hotel. I was talking to people who've only been there in passing. That's when they go to South California, they stay at the Paseo.
So it's not that I don't like the hotel. I do like the hotel.
Breakfast was great. Lunch is great.
And then you have that mall right there and an Equinox.
Pacific.
Okay. And it has that coffee, Phil's Coffee right there.
Phil's Coffee.
This is what I don't like. I don't like the lack of exhibit hall. That's what I don't like.
Oh, well, lack of exhibit hall.
Yes,
we don't have it. It does not have an exhibit hall.
I need to be very clear with what I say.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I have the next time they do a remodeling, we'll ask them to put an exhibit hall on. How's that sound?
Can you do that?
I can certainly ask.
Yeah. I mean,
you already say no?
You already have the no. It's already not happening as far as
you're concerned. But here's the thing. You don't recognize it. The entire hotel is going to be the exhibit hall.
Like, oh, because you're changing it.
No, because I have the whole hotel. So when you walk in, there's the furniture that was there is going to be gone. There's going to be a few ping pong tables.
That's really cool.
We can brand the foyer. Like those couches there.
You know what you should do? You should offer branding of the foosball tables as a sponsorship.
Oh, we're going to offer. There's going to be branding. There's going to be more branding at this place. Because in the restaurant, in the bar, we can brand that. And so, you know, there's all this space now that it's not like a regular place. We can set up wherever we want, basically. You can set out at the pool. I mean, it's going to be like, I've never bought out a hotel before.
Oh, wow.
And so when you drive in, like the awning is going to say Travelers University on it.
I really like this. I like this a lot.
This is going to be the coolest thing. And this is going to, and I'm working on developing this new model where we could just buy out the hotel, a smaller hotel, and own it. Because then a lot of people staying at hotels around it, but the hotel's got a big space for the lectures and stuff. So we can hold a lot more room. Like we can host a lot more people than the hotel can hold is what's exciting about it.
I have a question though. When you buy out the whole hotel, does that preclude people from coming in and using the restaurants or no?
Yes. So everybody in the restaurant will be with Travelers University.
So do they then tell you like there's a minimum that must be met in order for you?
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does that scare you?
It used to, but since my food and beverage bill is typically three times what the minimum is by the time we're done, it doesn't scare me anymore. It's but just part
it
not, of the...
Is it like just, but it won't be like an open bar, open restaurant scenario or...
No, like the bar and restaurant, people have to buy their drinks and buy their food. Those are, but obviously at the parties and stuff, there's open bars and for breakfast and lunch, there's, it's all catered. So if they want to go to the bar and restaurant, they're welcome to.
And no lines at your events. Typically.
That's true. Never a line.
That was a really big thing for you, your first conference. Do you remember?
Yeah, only because
gone to a conference that had a crazy line.
Yes, that's no longer in existence.
But you don't think it'll come back?
No.
I think everybody knows what we're talking about.
Yes. Not in that form.
Huh. We'll talk later.
Yes.
Offline. Okay.
I'll give you the scoop.
I can't wait.
Let's finish talking about Huntington Beach, though, and why it's going to be the greatest conference ever.
Yes, interviewer.
So, besides the great hotel and the great food... There's four lecture tracks going on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday with the top trial lawyers in the country. And, you know, like Brian Panish, Sean Claggett, Joe Fried, et cetera, et cetera. Because, you know, John Romano, I mean, these are just great lawyers. And then there's eight workshop tracks. And the workshops are, you know, where they interact with small groups. But on top of that workshop tracks, you know, teaching things like my stuff I teach on connection and trial presentation skills. You know, other people are teaching, you know, cross-examines. Kurt Zahner's going to help people with,
I love Kurt.
You know, his stuff that he did before, which is, you know, applying acting skills and stuff. Just so many great lawyers. And then there's six master classes, which I'm fired up about too.
Okay.
And so the master classes.
So did you copy the name from... The platform masterclass?
I kind of wanted to call them trial colleges, but I'm letting people call them masterclass or trial college, whatever they want to do.
Okay.
But last year we had three of them there. We had, you know, we had David DeRobertis on employment, Dale Gallipo on civil rights. And this year we got Dale Gallipo and he's going to be doing it with Adante Poynter.
Didn't Daryl do one too?
Yeah, Daryl did a two-day masterclass with Andrew Finkelstein on optimizing your business. And so this year we're, you know, Dudley, you know, Chad Dudley and Steve DeBosier are doing a two-day business optimization class. Michael Hill is doing a two-day elder abuse masterclass.
Very cool.
Lloyd Bell, medical malpractice. Ben Cloward is doing it on premises liability and negligent security.
Okay.
He's out of Vegas. He's a great lawyer, great guy. And then... You know, so I think that's six of them, you know, between civil rights, employment, medical malpractice, elder abuse, business, and premises.
That's really cool.
Yep. And then Daryl's worked on, I was just talking to him recently, he's developed some new strategies and he's got these six verticals. He's been applying to his own business and growing his own business. So I think he's going to come out.
You don't know yet.
Well, everything's scheduled and pending, but let's say... extremely likely. This could be another thing that's off the record. I'll give you the skinny.
Okay.
Later.
Yes.
There's a lot of editing for you, Matt.
Yeah, sorry.
A lot of editing. So yeah. All this stuff, she wants all the backstories, what's going on? How are you doing it?
Yes, I do.
I understand.
You're the same way, though.
No, it's always good to know. You feel like you're in this, you're in the know.
Yeah. Do you think it's because I'm a female?
All the problems that you have are because you're a female, Maria.
Yeah, you know what? Some really are, though.
Yeah, like cramps.
Well, that's like a minor annoyance. There are bigger problems.
Bigger problems.
Yeah, like not being taken seriously.
Oh.
By you.
Having emotional instability.
I feel pretty emotionally stable.
Instability.
You've gone off on me awful, and I didn't.
Oh, no. I'm going off. I can't remember. I can't remember going off anywhere. But like, no. It's like one time you pissed me off like 3 years ago when I barely knew you. I went off on you then.
Yes.
You were acting like a spoiled child.
No, you so just do not.
I had to be a parent.
You don't.
And help the child.
I don't think
that's what a parent does.
You don't know how to parent.
I love we help the child.
You don't have children. You know nothing about parenting. Like literally nothing.
That's probably a good thing.
I think so.
Probably a good thing.
I agree. I think some people are just, you know.
Yeah. I know. Not meant for it. We'll see.
Not meant for it.
That's all right. So
I think actually it would really change you though. Like maybe.
Everything changes you. You think when you don't have a life of your own anymore, of course it's going to change you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sucks sometimes.
I bet it does.
It does.
I've heard.
But then it's also so beautiful.
I've heard that too. Everybody knows that has kids really loves the whole thing.
I mean, the whole thing?
Not the whole thing, but they're like, some of them are like, I don't know if I'd do this again. I'm like, I can see why.
Yeah.
But
it would be really interesting to see you with like a little.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
I know every life has its chapters and its phases.
You were a super cute kid. Well, teen. Dan was actually kind of hot as a teen.
That was a model.
He was a model.
I was a model.
Yeah.
Go figure that one out.
So you probably have like a cute little one.
Probably.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel confident in that, but the world doesn't know yet, so.
Yeah. So would you
sometimes people that seem pretty, you know, I've seen some people I thought were very attractive. I had a baby. I was like, whoa, is that kid yours or you should adopt that thing?
Would you spoil your kid?
I can't picture it because like, I know I've seen so many spoiled kids and it's a disaster.
Do you think that you were a spoiled kid? Because aren't you like the youngest of like 18 kids?
Eight. Was I spoiled? I don't know what spoiled means. I don't think
spoiled.
So.
Definitely spoiled.
Spoiled makes people soft. If people are nice to you and give you a lot of attention. But like my dad was.
Yeah, you're not soft.
My dad was not soft.
I would not call you soft.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
but people that are spoiled generally are often soft because they have to, you know, spoiled means you don't have to deal with the friction of life. You know,
yeah.
When there's problems, you know, your parents solve everything for you.
Yeah, I don't like
that. Yeah, well, that doesn't. I've seen people
that's
like that.
The
they
real
don't grow
world.
Up into independent, strong people. They grow up people as soon as there's some, you know, challenge, it cracks them.
Yeah.
Instead of like, you know, it's like everything in life that's in the future. Because I just remember like looking back on 2022, and it was September 7th or September 8th, which was around my birthday. And I looked at my registration, and there was like 430 people registered for Vegas. And I'm like, this is fucked. I'm fucked if I don't do something about this. And so for
how
a moment-
How many did you need?
Well, my goal was 1,000 because the space is so big.
Right.
You have this huge space. You have 500 people, this huge space. It looks like it's like
to
empty.
Give people context, how old are you?
56.
56, okay.
How's it helping with context?
Well, we're talking about age.
No, I said that was my birthday. We weren't talking about
age. I know, but you had also said something earlier.
It was a month and a half before the conference.
Okay.
And so like I was feeling a bit of panic. Why is that funny? What was funny about that?
No, the whole thing, the conversation made no sense and it was my fault.
Okay.
Because I'm like, how old are you? Like, what is this?
Like, to give context, like context to what?
I think it was like old context that I needed and I took too long to ask.
Right. Anyways, so.
Can we title this Shooting the Shit?
Right. So my point is that in this moment, like I felt a lot of panic because it's, you know, you think about the future and you think about something you've really worked hard on. And I wasn't even thinking about the money. I was thinking about all these people who counted on me. Because, you know, there's a lot of people counting on you to a conference. I mean, exhibitors count on you. They count on you. They're spending a lot of money and taking time, and they need to meet people. I can't close business for people, but I can make introductions. So they're counting that you're going to have a lot of people come.
The speakers?
The speakers are counting on you because these people are very busy. And they come to your conference to speak. They're expecting that there's going to be lawyers there, and they're going to have an audience. And then the attendees are counting on you because they want to learn.
And network
and make new friends.
Right.
And learn stuff to change their lives. And so that is pressure. But like my friend John Romano says, you know, he says pressure is a privilege. And in that pressure, in the moment, I felt like some slight panic. But then I just had to refocus my mind and be like, look, this is a challenge that I can overcome. And right there, I wrote 1,000 on my wall of my condo. Actually, I got the picture if you want to see it. It's in my, but I wrote 1,000, and then every day I'd write the date and the number of people registered. Write the date and number of people registered every day. And as soon as somebody would call them up, tell them about the conference, tell them how, you know, what they're going to get from it, the benefit of it, and just keep building those relationships and, you know, ask them to let their friends know about it. And, you know, we ended up, and I remember it was like 10 days before the conference, and I finally broke 1,000. And then we got to like 1,200. And
that's amazing.
It was great.
That's really cool. I'm curious about your childhood. What was it like having 7 older siblings?
It was great.
Yeah?
Because this is the only world you know, first of all.
That's true.
It was because everybody in the community knew my family.
Where did you grow up?
In the suburbs of Detroit, Michigan.
Okay.
Birmingham, Michigan.
So you were a rich kid? Kind of.
Upper middle class, like I'm kind of hot.
You were kind of rich.
I mean, I went to private schools.
Okay, definitely a rich kid.
And all my brothers and sisters did too.
What did your parents do?
My dad was a lawyer. My mom was a graphic artist. I used to work with my dad.
What type of law did he do? Criminal?
Criminal, family, you know, estates, like wills. Divorce. He was sort of like a country lawyer, like a general practitioner.
That's cute. Well, any of your other siblings lawyers?
Yes. Two of my brothers and one of my sisters were all lawyers.
Were? Are they?
Well, one has moved on.
I'm sorry.
To the next world. And then my sister quit practicing law about 20 years ago. And my brother, Chris, just retired.
What type of law did Chris do?
He was a personal injury lawyer.
Really? Where?
In Michigan. He came to the Huntington Beach last year for the first time.
Oh my God, is he coming to any others? I want to meet him. I have questions.
Is he coming to any others? No, but a lot of my family members are coming to Huntington Beach. Oh. Three of my sisters are coming.
No, this might make me go.
Three of my sisters
are coming. Can I have them on the podcast and ask them embarrassing stories about you?
That'd be fun.
That would be fun, right?
That'd be fun.
You
really like my sister, Vera, I think. She's a character.
Yeah, I like characters.
Harrison's mom.
Oh, okay.
Harrison's mom. You should have Harrison on the podcast. That'd be hilarious.
Yes.
I just took the bar exam for the second time.
Yeah. Well, how many times did it take you?
4.
Okay. Well, he's...
We call it resilience building. Like, some people think I'm not too bright. Other people, I think I got a lot of grit. Life's perspective. I could be both. Not too bright. When you're not too bright, you got to have a lot of grit.
I think you're bright in your own way.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah. Gosh,
thank you for the...
You say that sarcastically, but I know you are thanking me. I feel it.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Bright my own way.
You definitely have a ton of grit.
I got grit.
You have more grit than most people.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's
unknowingly
true.
So. Yeah. So.
Choice.
Tell me more about your childhood.
I feel like I'm on a therapy couch here.
Well, we're just shooting the shit today.
It's
a different type
of
episode.
All right.
We're going to call these types of episodes.
So I grew up, so I was the youngest of 8 kids. I went to private all boys Catholic schools my whole life.
Until
I was in 7th grade.
Let's talk about that.
No, it's not good.
Was it traumatizing?
It's not traumatizing.
You don't
learn how to socially function well.
I went to Catholic school
being
too.
Being with all the same gender. You don't know, like.
I went to an all girls Catholic school, but I was like till like 3rd grade or something.
Yeah,
so it wasn't.
Sixth grade. Those are the formative years.
That's different.
Then 7th and 8th grade, you go to a new school and you're like the odd person out. And I used to be kind of fat, so I got picked on a lot too.
Really? The pictures I saw of you, well, that was like you were 18.
No, when I was like in 7th, 8th grade, I was probably, they called it husky back then because they didn't want to call you fat. They would be nice about it. So I'd go to buy the husky store. Mm. I'm a husky guy.
I'm going to call you husky going forward. Is that okay?
You call me whatever you want.
Thank you.
Okay. So that was, you know, getting picked on a lot as a kid teaches you
that's tough.
A lot. No, it's not easy. It's cruel. No. Kids are cruel.
I know.
And,
kids are really cruel.
You know, you build toughness and sensitivity at the same time.
But I think you also get, like, there's trauma there.
There's definitely, it's definitely can be trauma inducing when you get, you know, like bullies, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You know, I remember this one guy, he ended up being a professional football player, but he was like the biggest guy in the school. And he was talking some smack about my sister. And I said something back to him and he put me in an arm lock. And I still remember he squeezed my neck. His arms were huge, huge. He was a football. He squeezed my neck so hard I couldn't breathe and took my head, pushed it into the lockers. I just remember that. I mean, still, I remember that was 45 years ago, like panicking me.
That sounds awful. I'm sorry.
It was awful. But you know what?
I don't like kids. They're such assholes. I really have an issue with it.
You know what? Some people are like that. And so, but I went to this all boys Catholic high school, Brother Rice, and I was happy to get out of there.
I bet.
Yep. And then I went to University of Michigan for 4 years.
Wait, hold on. I'm not done.
I was happy to get out of there.
Okay.
Went to law school at night, Detroit College of Law. It was in the ghetto of Detroit. Happy. They tore it down right after I left. They built a stadium on top of it. It was great. Much better.
Wait, hold on. Let's stick to your childhood for a second. What was your mom like?
My mom was great. She was a graphic artist, so she was very eccentric. She was really known for having flaming red hair.
Really?
Yep. She was a character. She
is that where you got your character from?
I want to know about that, but probably had some influence on me.
Yeah.
No, I adored her. She died from cancer.
Oh, I'm sorry.
She was like 70. No, she was 83. But she got diagnosed and like 6 months later, gone.
That's tough. Were your parents still married then?
They were. They were. My dad lasted for a couple more years without my mom. And then he decided it's time to go. I remember seeing him for the last time. He's in a hospital bed. And I was on my way to Wyoming to the Trial Lawyers College. And my brothers were there and we were chatting with them. I said, Dad, don't do anything dumb while I'm gone. I'm trying to go have a good, peaceful 10 days of learning. He says, don't you worry. You go learn. And then I was gone 3 days and I get a call. And, you know, it's crazy that my friend Daryl Edwards Jr. flew me back from the ranch to Jackson, where I was supposed to fly out of, in a private plane, because it was like a 2.5 hour ride. He said, I'll give you a ride, because he was out there for this grad program.
Mm-hmm.
Month later, he died in a plane crash.
In a plane crash? I have so much anxiety about planes. Let's not talk about that.
No, the small planes?
Yeah.
It was, you needed a pilot for 15 years.
No, let's not talk about that. So you had a feeling about your dad. That's why you told him not to do anything.
Well, yeah, he was 88 years old and...
But he just died of natural causes?
Yeah, but natural cause is not wanting to live. He's like, I'm done. He's like, I want to go home.
But he didn't take his life.
No.
Okay, sorry. I just want to be clear to the audience.
No. But, you know, when you're tired of living, it's time to go.
You think? I think so many people are born tired of living.
You may be right. But when you're tired of living and you're old.
Yeah.
And you have a lot of health problems. And I think, too, empathetically, he didn't want to live anymore because he didn't want to be like the focus of all the kids. All the kids and having to be cared for. And he was taking up all of our energy to do that. And I don't think anybody wants to be a burden on their family.
And you were close to your parents?
Yes. You know, that's why I couldn't have moved away if my dad didn't pass on. As soon as he passed, I was out of Michigan within 2 months.
And do you stay in touch with your siblings?
Yeah.
Are they characters?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't know if it's a character. I mean, you'll definitely know that they're related to me when you meet them, most likely. If you meet them, you'll know they were related.
It must have been fun to have so many siblings.
It was great. I'm very blessed.
Yeah.
You know, every day I feel honestly very blessed with my life. And you know, nobody's life is perfect. But if you focus on everything that's good in your life, then it feels like it could be perfect.
You enjoy your life.
I'm very happy.
I believe you.
You know, and I mean, if you have a full life, if you have friends and you have a career that you have, that you're passionate about, that you're good at, that you can make a good living and you enjoy it and you get the things to travel and meet so many interesting people and make so many great friends and do things that you think are creating a lot of good in this world, what more can you ask for?
I agree with you. You and I talk about this a lot, especially about like getting to go to conferences and see our friends and how much best. Going to nice restaurants and how like lucky we are, right? Yeah. That we get to do this on
right.
On
some people have to do the same thing every day.
Yeah.
And they don't get to travel.
Right.
They don't get to meet, you know, and it's just like, I can't imagine. But
yeah, we are very lucky.
Nor do I have to. I look back at my life back in Michigan, grinding away, being a criminal defense lawyer, just running to court, dealing with these idiot judges. Some of them, they're so disrespectful.
Well, you're kind of annoyed about the judge in LA. You tried a PI case, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It was a crazy case. It was a,
why did
a fight.
Why did the judge annoy you so much? Tell me about it.
He was a combination of the worst three things you could ask for from somebody on the bench. And that's being mean, having a mean disposition, mm-hmm. being ignorant of the law, and having a short temperament. I mean, it was crazy. Like when you go into, it's like, you know, when there's no rules in the game that you're playing.
Well, he also said he wasn't very bright, right?
That's ignorant of the law.
Okay.
But when there's no rules, then it's chaos. Because rules are what make things fair. When it's predictable, the rules of evidence, the rules of procedure. And that way, especially when a judge doesn't interpret, you know, clearly puts his thumb on the scale, you know, it's like you're just going every day and it's just abusive.
And do you think he just didn't like you, or you think that's just how he is with everybody?
I think that it was a combination of both. I mean, everybody that I've talked to about him says he's the worst judge.
Well, there you go.
And a complete, you know, just the worst. But I think that also that, you know, he didn't like our case. He didn't, you know, maybe he didn't like me. I don't know. Didn't like my co-counsel. I don't know. It's hard to say because it started off fine until the guy just went, you know, the guy was just nuts.
And so, was there a trigger? Like, did something happen that you feel triggered him?
It's, again, when somebody's unbalanced, it's like you say, good morning. And then they go nuts on you. So that's how life is sometimes.
What did you learn from that experience? Because it was your first
trial in a couple of years since COVID.
Had you done a trial that was PI before?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I didn't know that.
So what I learned from the experience is, number one, that, because I said to, it was so funny because my buddy said to me, he's like, man, he's like, it's too bad this had to be the judge, you know, for your first trial in a couple of years, you know, getting back to the swing of things. But then the client was so great. He goes, no, he goes, this is part of your journey and you were meant to have this judge because you're going to learn, you know what I mean? And this is how you, and I'm like, you know what? That's true. And it is part of a journey. And it's in, and it's, you just have to, you know, you have to learn to deal with these things. And to learn to deal with them, you just have to have the experience of, you know, somebody openly abusing you in public. Because once you've had it a couple of times, you're like, okay, now it doesn't affect me anymore. When it first happens, you're like, because it's the shock, it's the disbelief. But after it happens, then you're like, okay. And then like at the first day or two, it bothered me. After that, I'm like, I don't give a shit. I'm like, whatever. I'm like, I'm just gonna do the best I can and give it all I got. And that's what's gonna happen. I'm gonna leave it here. And I'm going to take what I learned from it. I'm going to walk away and I'm going to be better.
But period. I feel like you're good at that. Like you're good at after like processing something to be like, I'm going to do the best I can. It just is what it is. I'm not going to let it impact me. Like from like other conversations I've had with you, I feel like you're good at that.
Well, that's all we can do. I mean, if you give it your best and accept it for what it is and sit back and reflect on what you could have done better, what you learned and move on. It's a process. It's a process of every day trying to get better at whatever you're putting effort into. You know, we both run businesses.
Yep.
You know, people think, oh, these are great business, easy business. Ask anybody putting on a conference how easy and great business it is. Sure. I mean, it takes a lot of moving parts and there's a lot of risk. You got to sign big contracts. You got big obligations. And you sign these contracts a year or 2 years ahead of time before anybody's coming. And then hope that everybody still wants to come to your party you're throwing. Because there's a lot of people throwing conferences. And I'm just
there's so many conferences now.
I know. I feel sorry for all those people throwing conferences.
It's just, it's crazy to me.
It's weird, isn't it? Like before the pandemic, there was only MTMP, NTL, and then the local conferences.
And then AAJ.
And AAJ.
But that was it.
That was it. And the local state conferences.
And then now... I now, can't keep up. And I try.
We
and I try.
Oh, well, there were Southern trial lawyers and Western trial lawyers back then too. Just be clear about it.
That's true. I didn't attend those before. I've actually never gone to Western.
Western, I just got back from there.
How was
Sun Valley? It's phenomenal.
That's amazing.
Such nice people.
I just can't,
You're also a mom and a wife, okay? If I was a husband and a dad, yeah, I couldn't be on the road 3 weeks a month. It's exhausting.
It is. It's really.
I can't wait to get home. Every time I get home, I'm like, and then 3 days later, I'm back on the road.
Dude, I flew in last night at midnight. I leave tomorrow at 7 a.m. Just because I don't have it in me right now.
I had to get up at 4 a.m. in the morning yesterday to get to the airport to fly out from Sun Valley, Idaho. Left at 7 a.m., got here at 3.
You almost missed your flight the other day. It was really fun watching you run.
Oh, I didn't almost miss my flight. I was there an hour early. You guys are like putzing around, almost got me nervous, but that's okay.
Yeah, no, you definitely got nervous. It was fun.
I definitely got nervous.
Yeah. I get a kick out of you.
I'm glad.
Yeah.
It's been fun.
It has been fun.
It's been fun. It's such an exciting thing to...
I feel like people almost associate like you with me or me with you. Like people always be like...
You've given me the honor of being on your Instagram so much.
I know. I think that's what did it.
I mean... So much, so many people know me from your Instagram.
So many people
know. They're like, are you Dan Ambrose? I'm like, yeah, like I see him on Maria's Instagram all the time.
That's really funny. Dude,
what's my name's John. Can you remember it? I'm like,
no, that doesn't happen. Are you serious?
So the name thing, but now people give me compliments on my ability to remember names.
Except you forgot my new director of sales name today.
Ian.
It's not Ian, it's Sam.
Okay. If you say so.
Are you just going to call him?
That's what you want to call him.
Does he look like an Ian?
Kind of. It's so funny. There's a guy that works for K-Status, and I was calling him Matt all weekend. And then somebody says to me, his name's Sam. I go, dude, your name's Sam? He goes, yeah. I go, why'd you tell me that? I called you Matt for the last 2 days. He goes, I thought it was funny. I'm like, okay.
But I thought you were getting better. I mean, I guess better is not perfection.
I called him Sam for 3 days in a row. I thought I remembered his name. If somebody told me it was Matt, I would have corrected it.
But maybe that's why you got confused, because my guy's name is Sam.
That's probably what it did. Yeah. There was a Sam in my future that I wasn't aware of. And
oh, this was not recent. This was
last week.
Just kidding. That doesn't make any sense.
All right, are we done with our interview?
Do you want to be done?
Kind of.
Why?
I got to go out and network.
Okay.
I got people to meet.
Okay. Thank you to Dan Ambrose for everything he shared with us today. If you found this story valuable, please share it with someone you want to see succeed. Subscribe so you never miss an episode and leave a 5-star review. It goes a long way to help others discover the show.